just a thought, and the Lord takes it from there. And each one of us gets our messages, I guess, in a different way. Cindy and I were watching a TV program this week, a movie that we'd seen before, but it's been a number of years. The name of it was Armistead. I don't know whether any of you have seen it or not. It's made about 20 years ago, but it was based on actual events of a slave ship that came to the United States in 1839 from Sierra Leone. The course of the United States, of course, was in the process of reaching to what eventually resulted in our Civil War, and the abolition movement was already in full swing. But I'd advise you to if you haven't watched that movie, watch it. It's good. But there was something that occurred in there that lots of times when I'm watching something like that, I'll get my iPad out because I'm a history nut. And one of the main characters in that movie was John Quincy Adams. And of course, John Quincy Adams was the sixth president of the United States. But in this movie, and in reality, at that time, he was serving as a congressman in the House of Representatives from Massachusetts. He had already served his presidency, and he went back to Massachusetts, and rather than just sit down and do nothing, he ran for Congress and represented Massachusetts as a representative in Congress for the rest of his life. But in this occasion, he was called upon to present his case before the Supreme Court, he did a magnificent job. In the course of looking that up and reading a little bit more about John Quincy Adams, one of the statements that was made was that he was the sixth president of the United States, and he was just an ordinary, average president. And I thought, you know, what is ordinary and what's average? To be a president of the United States in itself is a great thing. And many things were accomplished, and I'm certain that those 53 or 54 ones from Sierra Leone, they thought that John Quincy Adams was a great man, because through his oration and presentation to the Supreme Court, they were granted freedom. And they were granted the right and taken back to their home in Sierra Leone. And so that reminded me of some incidents in the Bible. And the title of my message this morning, and this message this morning is mostly to the Christian, but I'm sure there'll be something in here if you're here this morning and don't know the Lord. But the title of my message this morning is The Life and Times of an Ordinary Christian. The Life and Times of an Ordinary Christian. You know, I guess if you ask any young Christian particularly, who would you like to mold and pattern your life after? I'm certain that many of them would say Abraham, because Abraham was a man of great faith, and he showed that by getting up and leaving Ur of the Chaldees and following God, and God blessed him in all that he went through. And certainly Abraham was a great example. He stands out among the many ones that are in the Scriptures. Or someone might say, well, I'd like to be like David, who was valiant for the Lord, even when he was a young man and he faced Goliath, and he was a great leader for the Lord. And truly he was. And as we read through the Scriptures, we find many, many names that stand out. But I tell you what, there's far more ordinary ones that we don't know anything about, and they may not have risen to a great position of notoriety, but yet they were important. They were important because through their steadfastness, the gospel continued to spread. They lived their lives out of the spotlight, but yet in the spotlight of God. And one of those I'd like to read about this morning and use him as a background for this lesson. And that comes out of the book of Genesis in the 26th chapter. Book of Genesis in the 26th chapter. And we're going to be talking about Isaac. Now, all of us know who Isaac was, hopefully. Abraham had a son. His name was Isaac. Isaac was essential in God's plan to bring his son into the world down through the lineage of Abraham. But let's find out a little bit about Isaac and see what it was like to be a second generation Christian. In the book of Genesis, in the 26th chapter, I'd like to begin about the 12th verse and pick up from there. Isaac had and his family were in the midst of a famine. His father, Abraham, had a similar situation where the crops had failed. They had a big responsibility. It wasn't just them and their few children. They had servants. They had a large group of people that they were responsible for in their family, which was very large in number. And so the food was running out. And so Isaac had to look for another place to find food. And so he went down into the land of Gezer, and there where King Abimelech was. And evidently they had food because that's where he had gone to. And while he was there, and you'll find this in the earlier part of this chapter, God had appeared to him. And God appeared to Isaac, and he said, "Isaac, don't go down into Egypt. This land is the land that I'm going to give you. I promised it to your father, and I promised that through you that your posterity would be as the stars of heaven. And this is the land that I'm going to give you, so don't go down into Egypt. You stay here, and I will bless you here." And so Isaac didn't go down into Egypt. He stayed there. And we'll pick up at the 12th verse with Isaac in that land that he didn't own, but belonged to someone else. And here's how he behaved himself. It says, "Then Isaac sowed in that land and received in the same year 100-fold, and the Lord blessed him. And the man waxed great, and he went forward and grew until he became very great. For he had possessions of flocks, and possession of herds, and great store of servants, and the Philistines envied him. For all the wells which his father's servants had digged in the days of Abraham his father, the Philistines had stopped them and filled them with earth." Now, wells were important back then, not only for the flocks, but you can't survive without water, and they were in a desert area, and these wells were essential, and if you wanted to destroy a man, destroy his well, take away his water supply. And so Abraham, his father, as he traveled through that land with his herds, he had dug wells, and the Philistines, to spite him, after that Abraham had moved on, they stopped the wells up so that nobody else could come in and take the land. And so that's what Isaac had inherited. He had inherited wells as they found them that his father had labored for, but he got no value out of them because the Philistines had stopped them up. "And Abimelech said unto Isaac, Go from us, for thou art much mightier than we. And Isaac departed thence and pitched his tent in the valley of Gerar and dwelt there. And Isaac digged again the wells of water, which they had digged in the days of Abraham his father, for the Philistines had stopped them after the death of Abraham. And he called their names after the name by which his father had called them. And Isaac's servants digged in the valley and found there a well of springing water. And the herdsmen of Gerar did strive with Isaac's herdsmen, saying, This water is ours. And he called the name of the well Esek, because they strove with him. And they digged another well and strove for that also, and he called the name of it Sitnah. And he removed from thence, and he digged another well, and for that they strove not. And so he called the name of it Rabbah, and he said, For now the Lord hath made room for us, and we shall be fruitful in the land. And he went up from thence to Beersheba. Well, the Lord appeared unto him the same night, and said, I am the God of Abraham thy father, fear not, for I am with thee, and will bless thee, and multiply thy seed for my servant Abraham's sake. And he built an altar there, and called upon the name of the Lord, and pitched his tent there, and there Isaac's servants digged a well. Then Abimelech went to him from Gerar, and Ahazath, one of his friends, and Phicol, the chief captain of his army. And Isaac said unto them, Wherefore come you to see me, seeing that you hate me, and you have sent me away from you? And they said, We saw certainly that the Lord was with thee, and we said, Let there be now an oath betwixt us, even betwixt us and thee, and let us make a covenant with thee, that thou wilt do us no hurt, as we have done unto thee nothing but good, and have sent thee away in peace, thou art now the blessed of the Lord. We'll stop reading right there. That's enough to give us a little bit of a background. I want to tell you a few things about Isaac. First of all, I could tell you many things about Abraham. I could tell you many things about Jacob, but we don't hear much about Isaac. That's because Isaac's life was shadowed on both sides. He was shadowed on the front side by the deeds of his father Abraham, who was a great man. As a matter of fact, Paul said that Abraham believed God and it was counted unto him for righteousness, and Abraham is the pattern of our own faith. And so here he is shadowed on the front side by his great father Abraham, and then on the back side of his life, his son Jacob, out of whom came 12 tribes, and of who was the father of the nation of Israel and all 12 tribes. And that which Abraham obtained by faith, Jacob, we see, had many, many devastating experiences. We know how he cheated his brother out of his birthright. We know how that he went away into the land of his ancestors, and there he was cheated out of his first wife and had to work 7 years and then another 7 years. And all that beset him. He learned much about God by experience. But in the middle of that, we have Isaac. We have Isaac, who very little is said about, and yet he plays a critical part in the whole plan of salvation. Without Isaac, there would have been no Jacob. And certainly without Jacob, there would have been no 12 sons. There would have been no tribes of which that God made the great nation of Israel. And so Isaac was an extremely important person, but you don't find him very mentioned very much. But let's find out a little bit about Isaac, some facts about him. For one thing, Isaac lived longer than either Abraham or his son Jacob. Isaac lived to be 180 years old. And so he outlived, longevity-wise, he had a very long life. God blessed him and with a long life. And so he lived longer than either his father or his son. Another thing that I found interesting about Isaac as I studied some of the facts of his life is that Abraham traveled a great distance out of Ur of the Chaldees, and he wandered all over what later became the Promised Land and that whole area, went down into Egypt, traveled around with a great crowd. Jacob as well traveled all the way back to Laban, and he traveled all over. But do you know that Isaac never traveled more than about 75 miles from the place that he was born? Never traveled any at all. Was born and died in Portland, Tennessee. Born and died all right in the area where he was raised up. Didn't have to travel, but oh, God blessed him. God was pleased with him. God spoke to him. But we don't find any great feats or anything in that. And you know, I've been privileged to travel, not only with my work, but also in trying to serve the Lord. But you know, many, many Christians never leave their hometown. They never leave their area. Many of them might even live and die in the same house in which they were born. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with it. We find that one of the greatest men that God used never traveled. He just stayed right pretty much at home from the time where he was born for 180 years. He only had one wife. One wife. Now his father Abraham, we know the story about Sarah and her handmaid Hagar. We also know that after Sarah died that Abraham remarried and had another wife. We know that. We know that Jacob had two wives and two concubines, a total of four that brought forth his 12 children. Well, more than 12, he had some daughters, Dinah as well. But we find that Isaac had one wife, Rebekah. And he loved her from the bottom of his heart, spent his life with her, was faithful to her, was pure, didn't have to go out and have a whole bunch of women. And so we find that he had one wife, different than his dad, different than his own son. We find that Isaac had no great battles. He didn't have any uprisings whatsoever. We know that Abraham had to go and deliver Lot one time after Lot had been captured out of Sodom, and the whole city of Sodom had been captured, and Abraham rose up an army and went and had a great battle there. We know that Jacob had an army as well. We find that Isaac didn't have any great battles, not like David, not like many of the others of the judges and those kings that we read about. Isaac never had to have a conflict of any kind whatsoever with any of his neighbors. God appeared to him only twice. I mentioned both of those. God appeared to him and told him not to go down to Egypt, and he appeared to him here in Beersheba, and there's no other record that God ever appeared to him. You know, many Christians, they'll go through their lives and they'll have one or two mountaintops experiences. Certainly we have one place, if we've been saved, where that God appeared to us and saved our soul and made a place of remembrance and spoke to our heart. And you know, we may have another one of those high mountaintops in our life. But we find that Abraham had many of those. We find Jacob had many of those, but Isaac didn't. Isaac had two occasions where that he was in close contact with God to where it's recorded, but we find that all the way through his life that he was a man who served God. Even though that he didn't have many of those mountaintop experiences. I know that I'm in services sometimes and I hear people get all happy and shouting and they have that mountaintop experience and they say, well, I wish I could have another one of those. I've had one or two, never to the point where I've ever shouted. I've never done that. But I've been close to God and felt God's presence. And so we can't measure our Christianity or how much that God loves us by whether or not we've had a great number of mountaintop experiences. Some will, some won't. The vast majority won't. But there's one thing that we can know for sure. If we've been saved, we've had one experience with God that has put a marker in the sand that said, here, I met God and God met me, and I remember that, and God changed me and told me that he'd be with me. Isaac had one of those as well. But I want you to understand also that Isaac was a man. We talked a little bit about this in Sunday school this morning, and that is that none of us are perfect, and all of us have troubles in life. Every one of us. I don't know what old John Quincy Adams' troubles were, as I studied a little bit about him this week, but I can guarantee you that being a human being, that we're going to have troubles in life. We're going to have difficulties, and if we read the lives of these men in the Scriptures, that we'll find out that they were no different. They had problems, they had family troubles, they had everything that you and I have, they had the same problems. They had some problems. Sometimes I read in their lives and I think, how on earth can God bless these people so much when their lives was like a little Peyton place or like some novel that you've read about murder and palace intrigue and unfaithfulness. I mean, their lives were filled with that. Jacob had those problems. Abraham had those problems. And I want you to understand that Isaac, being an ordinary Christian, he had those problems as well. When he was just a child, he was bullied by his brother. Some of our kids go to school and they get bullied. And that's terrible that it happens. The cruelty many times of children can just be overwhelming. But Isaac experienced that. He had an older brother that was 14 years older than him. And his brother bullied him, mocked him, made fun of him. And so he experienced that. He knew what it was like to be bullied and put down. Isaac was very close to his mother, Sarah. And when she died, it devastated him. We find, if we read in some of the earlier chapters, that after his mother died, that he spent much time in meditation out in the field, meditating. He was very close to his mother, and it upset his world when his mother died. And it was only after his mother died that Abraham began to seek a wife for him. That's another story that's further back. But we find that that it brought great trouble in his life when he lost his mother. Later he lost his father, and we will as well. But it really affected him when he lost his mother. Now, of course, you see that caused another problem in his life. And that is that after his mother Sarah died, we find in the previous chapter that Abraham remarried. And when he remarried, that meant Isaac had a stepmother. Now some of our families are split that way, and we have step-parents within the family. It creates some difficulty sometimes. Isaac went through that. He had a stepmother to deal with. And guess what? They had more children. Abraham and his second wife had children, so he had stepbrothers and stepsisters, half-brothers and half-sisters, that he had to deal with. And so he knew what it was like to live in a split family, one in which that he may have or may not have been treated equally as well as he was when his mother Sarah was alive. And so he knew what it was like to have to deal with a stepmom, someone who was not his real mother, and yet that his father loved and was part of the household. And so not much different than the lives of many of our Christian people today. Our young children many times are brought in and they have that divided family situation and they have to deal with it. But Isaac had to deal with that same thing as well. He had to learn to cope with that. After he got married to Rebekah, they spent 20 years trying to have children. She was barren. And that was a grief to his heart, because children are a blessing from the Lord, and certainly in those days, the necessity of having children, to not only to leave your earthly things to, but to help take care of you in your old age, to work the farm, to do those things that were necessary to survive, and yet he had servants. I'm sure he had all of those things, but he had no children. And Rebekah was grieved at heart because she didn't have any children. And so Isaac, loving his wife, besought God on her behalf that she might have children. And God heard his prayer, and she conceived, and Jacob and Esau were born. And so he knew what it was like to struggle through fertility issues, trying to have children and couldn't. Sometimes our children and those that we love, they try to have children and they can't. It becomes a grief to their heart. But he endured through all of that. And he went to God, and God heard his prayer and gave him children. But guess what? Those children didn't get along. Those children squabbled. They fought. We know the story of how that Jacob cheated Esau out of his birthright. How that all these things had happened. And so his house was in a turmoil. His house was upset. The children didn't get along. He seemed to favor Esau. Rebekah seemed to favor Jacob. And so there was a tension in the house. And he had to live through that. And eventually it resulted in Esau marrying someone that was a grief to Isaac and Rebekah's heart. He married two women that were of the land, and they served other gods. They were pagan worshippers. They may have been good people, I don't know, but their lifestyle, their service to their God was contrary to what Isaac knew, and so it was a great grief to their heart. I'm telling you, many families find that our children may choose a mate that is not to our liking, that can bring grief to our heart. Isaac went through that as well. Esau, it seemed like that the more that that it grieved Isaac, that he went out and took two more wives later on. And so we find that it caused a great turmoil in the family, and Isaac lived through that. But he was still just an ordinary Christian. Same type of problems that each and every one of our families go through as well. And so there was family tension. There was children that didn't get along. There was deception. There was all kinds of things that went on in the family that went along. And that oldest son, that marriage created a great problem. Jacob had to go and leave the country because that his brother was so angry at him. And so Isaac lived to be 180 years old. He lived to be 180 years old. His brother, half-brother, I should say, Ishmael, had already died at 137. So he was already passed away. Isaac alone was left. And there he was in his old age. Rebekah had already passed away. Esau was off living in the world and with the land and his in-laws and their families. Jacob was ostracized down in the land of where Laban lived. And here he was, an old man. And he'd come down and everyone was gone. But God didn't desert him. God was with him right down to the very end. He was just an ordinary Christian. But oh, how important that he was. Now, I need to bring out, before I run out of time, I need to bring out a couple of points in Isaac's life that we read about that are essential for us to understand the kind of man that he was. And that, first of all, we need to understand a little bit about his heritage. He was a second generation Christian. His dad, Abraham, had served God, and God had blessed Abraham. And so Isaac falls into that category that many of us fall into, myself included, that I'm a second generation Christian. Some of you here are second, maybe third or fourth generation Christian, that you were raised up in that and taught about that. And yet we find Isaac was the same, and he never swerved away from that. He just went on and served God. Because he'd been taught about God. He'd been educated about God, and he believed in God. Now, we all know the story about Isaac, how that when Abraham's faith was put to the test, that he took Isaac up to the mountain of Moriah. And we learned something else about Isaac in that. Isaac was not just a little 2 or 3 year old. Josephus says that he was somewhere between 22 and 25 years old. And all of the accounts indicate that. He was not just a young little boy. He was a young man. And very strong, no doubt, because that Abraham had carried all the wood and all the stuff for the fire. And so I want you to understand that as an ordinary Christian, he obeyed his parents. The Bible teaches us to obey your parents. Children, obey your parents, and life will, and your days will be many, and the Lord will bless you. He obeyed his father. He lived to be 180 years old, and God blessed him. He still had troubles, but God blessed him in many ways. But he was obedient to his parents, even up when he was in his 20s, and he was taken up to Mount Moriah there. And so we learn a little bit about his character, that he was an obedient child. Obedient all the way through, loved his mother up until that she passed away, and he was pushing 40 years old then, but he was attached and close to his parents. We also learned that Isaac himself had a strong faith. Now, we tell the story about Abraham, and we read about the great faith of Abraham, how that he loved God and trusted God so much that he took his only son up and was willing to take his life and put him there on the altar and had the knife drawn back ready to take his life. And we talk about the great faith of Abraham, and it was great. But what about the faith of Isaac? What about the faith of Isaac at 22, 25 years old, being bound to that altar, willing to let his father take his own life? And I'm sure we know that Abraham was 100 years old when Isaac was born. And so if he was 25 years old, Abraham would have been 125 years old. And I'm sure that physically, that 25-year-old boy could have taken him if he wanted to, but he didn't. He obeyed his parents. And his faith was great. He believed in the same God. He believed in his father. He trusted his father, and he willingly went down on that altar. Oh, you talk about great faith. We don't hear much about Isaac, but his faith was equally as strong as Abraham, which he had inherited from his father, because Abraham had been faithful. God even said to Abraham one time, "I'll give you children because I know you will be faithful to teach them about me." And so here we have this second generation young man who's been taught about God from his childhood up. He was mocked as a little child and bullied, all went through all the same things that many of our children go through. And yet here he is as a young adult, trusting God and still trusting his father and faithful to that which his father had relayed to him. And so we find that his faith was strong as well. We know that he was a loving husband because that he prayed for Rebekah, as we've already mentioned. But also we want you to understand that he wasn't a lazy kid either. He was an industrious worker. He inherited a lot from Abraham. The Bible teaches us that Abraham was very wealthy. He was very wealthy. He had cattle. He had servants. He had all kinds of things. As a matter of fact, God had blessed him so much he'd grown into a great troop of people. And guess who he left that to? He left that all to Isaac. And Isaac inherited all of that. And yet it tells us here, as we opened up, that Isaac sowed in that land and received in the same year 100-fold, and the Lord blessed him, and the man waxed great and went forward and grew until he became very great. And so he just didn't live on his inheritance. He just didn't take what mom and dad had to put in the bank and went and lived on it and squandered it away. He worked. He worked and he built upon that. If there's anything that the Bible teaches us, it teaches us the value of labor, the value of work, the value of industriousness, that God blesses that. And so that's a lesson for us to learn. That even though our parents may be able to hand off money to us, that we're not to just take that and squander it away. We're to be industrious in our own right and to labor with our hands. I fear that many today, particularly of the world, think that that because that you're a Christian, that you have to make a handout to everybody, that you have to give everything that you've gotten and accumulated to give it away. That's not what the Bible teaches at all. I want you to listen to what Paul said as he wrote to Timothy, as he wrote to the church in Thessalonians in the third chapter of 2 Thessalonians. He starts about the sixth verse and he says, "Now we command you, brethren, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you withdraw yourselves from every brother that walketh disorderly and not after the tradition which he received of us." Now he's going to tell us what that tradition is. And he says, "For you yourselves know how you ought to follow us, for we behaved not ourselves disorderly among you. Neither did we eat any man's bread for naught, but wrought with labor and travail night and day, that we might not be chargeable to any of you." So Paul says, I worked when I was among you. I labored, and it's disorderly to not labor and to work for yourself and to use the gift that God has given you to be industrious. He says, not because we have not power, but to make ourselves an example unto you to follow us. For even when we were with you, this we commanded you, that if any would not work, neither should he eat. Now, that's pretty strong language. But if you said that today in the political realm, I tell you what, you would be criticized, ostracized, and demonized because if you said, well, you know, somebody ought to work if they're able to, rather than just take a handout. And that's the society that we're living in now. We're growing a whole generation of people who are feel like that they're entitled. And the government, guess what? They want to step in and do that. They're willing to give the farm away because they want the vote. They want the power. I'm not going to get off into politics, but I want you to understand that this good Christian man, who though he had a great inheritance, and he was probably what we would call part of the 1%, he was wealthy, but he still worked. He still labored. He still did all that was necessary to increase. And I believe that those who were privileged enough to work for him and be part of his group, if you will, his family, they were blessed because he was blessed. And I tell you what, I look at, I'm a capitalist. I'm sorry, I'm a capitalist. I believe that there's not been any other governmental agency that's worked like capitalism has, because it encourages people to labor, to work, and to reap the fruits of their labor. And I tell you what, as I grew up, I was thankful for a company called American Cyanamid, because they provided a job for me. I worked hard for them. Sometimes it wasn't always easy, but they provided food. They provided the necessities for me to raise my family. And God blessed us, and I'm thankful for that. And our society needs to remember that just because that we have money within our society, that we should not diminish the value of work and labor, but we should encourage it. I've got to move on. I'm running out of time. So he was an industrious worker and labored that he might improve his own lot and the lot of those around him. I want you to also notice that as just a common, ordinary Christian, he was misjudged by others. He was misjudged by Abimelech. Because Abimelech looked at him and he said, boy, he's really increasing. He's getting more than we are. And Abimelech judged Isaac by his own character. Because he was afraid of Isaac. He said, he's getting stronger than we are. What if he decides to take what's ours? What if he decides to rise up against us? And so he was misjudged that he would even do that. I tell you what, many Christians, ordinary Christians, are misjudged. They're misjudged by those who look upon them and they misjudge what their intentions are, when really they may only mean good, but because that they themselves have a wrong attitude or a wrong character or a wrong action, they think that the other would as well. And so we find that he was misjudged by those about us. In the 16th verse it says, "And Abimelech said unto Isaac, Go from us, for thou art much mightier than we." He misjudged Isaac's character. Isaac would have not harmed him, never rose up against him. It wasn't within his nature to do so. And so he was misjudged about that. I want you to understand that he was patient. He was patient. What did Jesus teach us? That if a man strike you on the cheek, to turn the other cheek. If a man asks for your coat, give him your robe as well. And so that's what Isaac did. He turned the other cheek. Everywhere that he went, he tried to dig a well, and somebody else claimed it. And did he fight with them? No, he just moved on. Sometimes we just have to do that. People will wrong us. They will do what's wrong and treat us incorrectly. But Isaac gave us a great example. He didn't rise up against them, even though it's already told us that he was greater in number. He could have defeated them militarily if he had wanted to. But he didn't. He just moved on. And so he digged another well and they took it. And so he moved on until God allowed him to have peace. Sometimes we have to do that. We may have a neighbor, and I've never had this, but you may have a neighbor that creates nothing but problems for you, and just as an aggravation to you, encroaching upon what might be yours, and this happens, or just aggravating you all the time. But if we look at the example that Isaac left for us, we bear those things, and we just move on. We just bear those things and move on. And that's what Isaac did. He was very patient. Turned the other cheek. He persevered in well-doing. He just kept digging those wells. Every time that somebody took the one, he just moved on and dug another. Now, you might say that he was hard-headed and didn't realize that somebody else was just going to take the next one. But I believe that he was strong-hearted. He believed God. God said, "I will take care of you. You don't need to go down in Egypt. I want you to stay here and I'll take care of you." And even though he lost the first two wells, the first three wells, he just went on and dug another one. He was patient in that and persevered. Folks, isn't that what the scriptures teach us? That we are to persevere in well-doing? Well, that's the way that Isaac was. His piety was well shown. He loved God. God spoke to him. He builded an altar to God. Not only that, but he had an influence on his neighbors by his well-doing. He made a difference. He had power with people, not by military power, not by worldly strength, but by his good behavior and his well-doing. And as Abimelech looked at him and saw how God blessed him, Abimelech came to him and said, "We realize that the Lord has blessed you." I tell you what, that's how you win your neighbors. That's how you win the people you work with. Not by going out and putting a sticker on the front of your car that says, "I love Jesus," or knocking on 1,000 doors. That's not how we're measured by. How we're measured by is the character and the behavior that we have in an ordinary everyday life and the way that we live our lives. I'm going to close with this. I've already been longer than I intended to be. But I want to take you now from the life of Isaac, who was just truly an ordinary Christian, just an ordinary servant of God. I want to take you over to the book of Romans in the 12th chapter. And I want to finish up with what Paul said to the Christians at Rome in the 12th chapter of Romans. And this applies to us as well. If it applied to them 2,000 years ago, it applies to us. He's talking to Christians. I'm talking to those this morning who says, "Look at me, I'm a Christian. Look at me, I'm a Christian." And every time that we say that we are, that's what we're saying to the world. You can look at me and know what that a Christian is like. And so here's what he says. 9th verse, 12th chapter of Romans. Let love be without dissimulation. Abhor that which is evil, cleave to that which is good. Be kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love, in honor, preferring one another. In other words, give space to your brother. If he may have wronged you, if he may have done something wrong, let him have the advantage. Let him have the advantage. Not slothful in business. There we go. Be industrious. You might work for somebody. Give them the best that you got. Don't ever let your boss go home and say that, "Well, I didn't get my money's worth out of them today." Work hard, because that brings honor to God. not slothful in business, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation. Isaac was patient in tribulation. He was patient, I'm sure, when his brother mocked him when he was little. He was certainly patient with Abimelech, as Abimelech's herdman took the wells that he had unstopped and dug out, and already had told us that he was strong enough that he could have defeated him, but he didn't. He was patient, waiting on God. Continuing instant in prayer. He continued to serve God, to honor God, to make altars to God. Distributing to the necessity of the saints, given to hospitality. He took good care of those that he had responsibility for. He didn't starve them so he could have more. And I tell you what, a good employer won't do that. A good employer will take care of those who labor for him and work for him or her. And so we found that that was the character of Isaac. Bless them which persecute you, bless and curse them not. He didn't do that. He demonstrated that character. Rejoice with them that do rejoice, and weep with them that weep. Be of the same mind, one toward another. Mind not high things, but condescend to men of low estate. Be not wise in your own conceit. He was wealthy. He was the 1%, but he wasn't conceited in that. He didn't let that go to his head because that God had promised him the land. He could have gone to Abimelech and said, God has promised me this land and you need to be my servant. He could have done it militarily, but he didn't do any of that. He didn't do any of that. He waited on God. Recompensing to no man evil for evil, provide things honest in the sight of all men. If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. Regardless of your circumstances, regardless of what government that you might have, what country that you've been born in, regardless of what culture that you may be brought up in, but live peaceably with all men. You may live in a country where you don't have the freedoms that we enjoy in America, but our admonition is as Christians, as servants of God, as children of God, we're to, as much as possible, live peaceably with all men. Not look for an occasion for fault, not look for an occasion to rise up and to cause trouble, but to live peaceably with all men. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. Therefore, if thine enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink. For in so doing thou shalt heap coals of fire on his head. Be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. I'm going to close with that, and I hope that you'll go back and consider this life of Isaac as an example for us. Why did God record those things? Did you learn very much? It's going to change your life as a person. Well, there's things that we learned about what God expects out of us and how that God blesses these things. Doesn't mean you're not going to have trouble. Doesn't mean you might not have family problems. Your kids may not get along. One of them may marry outside of what you approve of, just like Isaac's did. But he made the best of it, and he continued to serve God. And that's the thing that we have to remember. That we are examples to our children, no matter how long we live. He lived to be 180 years old, and all that time he was still an example to his children. And so that's our privilege and responsibility as a Christian. We've got a song we're going to stand and sing. I'm going to leave that message with you. It was meant for those this morning who are Christians. But I hope that if you're here this morning and you've not been saved, that you'll realize that God wants you. He wants to save you, and He wants you to be one of His, and He'll bless you for that. He'll bless you for that. Most of all, He'll save your soul and deliver you from a certain destruction for those who are in rebellion against Him. Don't let that be your end. Because God doesn't want that to be your end. He wants to save you, just like He saved Abraham. And just like that Isaac was a second generation Christian. You may have troubles, but God will take care of us. Go ahead, what song do you have?
Number 113.